This is In Conversation from Apple News. I'm David Green, in for Shumita Basu. Today, why so many Americans are rejecting sunscreen. The final weeks of summer are here, and Americans are soaking up the last rays of sun. And many of them may be reconsidering whether or not to use sun protection. Over the past few years, an online campaign has been mounting against sunscreen. Influencers on social media have been making unsubstantiated claims that it's healthier not to use sunscreen, saying that sunscreen itself, rather than the sun, is doing harm to people's skin.
I believe that sunscreen is the most toxic invention of the 20th century.
The UV chemical filters in chemical sunscreens today are some of the most toxic products that people are using.
Our bodies are perfectly adapted for sunlight.
If you do burn, it probably has to do with the food you're eating and the state that you're in, as opposed to the sun, which is meant to be healing, hitting your skin.
Sunscreen is a scam. That's basically what it is.
And while this messaging is filled with falsehoods and inaccuracies, it is growing louder. A survey this spring from the Melanoma Research Alliance found that 53% of Americans have been exposed to claims that sunscreen is harmful. And the American Academy of Dermatology this year reported that more than 16 million adults have reduced or stopped their sunscreen use because of online messaging about its safety.
Everyone's hyper online, everyone's looking into everything, and you see this sort of momentum pick up for this type of sentiment, and it's alarming, and you're like, oh my God, I'm putting that on my skin?
That is Brian Underwood. He is the beauty and grooming director for Men's Health and Women's Health, and he recently wrote about the forces behind this trend and what the consequences might be. Skin cancer is the most common form of cancer in the country, with 1 in 5 Americans developing the disease before the age of 70. And skin cancer treatment costs billions of dollars every year. Sunscreen is one of the most effective tools to prevent skin cancer. And unlike most skincare products, sunscreen is regulated as over-the-counter medication by the FDA. So I sat down with Brian to talk to him about what we know and don't know about sunscreen itself, why so much misinformation has spread about it, and how new innovations and better messaging can fight the current backlash. I think back to my time as a kid, and you know, my mom passed away many years ago, but I'm still mad at her because she loved the beach. She grew up on the Jersey Shore. She loved getting a tan, and she rarely, if ever, encouraged me to use sunscreen. I mean, she would even sometimes offer me some of her tanning oil. She would say, like, you know, oh, a sunburn when it looks like that, that's just the beginning of what will become a good tan. And I got skin cancer a couple years ago, a basal cell carcinoma. But like, there's always been this, I don't know, either skepticism or lack of commitment to sunscreen. How is this moment different from what I saw my mom going through when I was a kid?
I can certainly relate to that, David. My mother was the same way. And I feel like when you and I were both kids and growing up, there wasn't much talk about it. And then, you know, sort of fast forward 15, 20 years, then I think people became hyper-vigilant and sun protection was a real part of the conversation. And now we find ourselves in this really interesting moment where it's sort of boomeranged back to where we were, but worse because we know better now. And, you know, I feel like way back when we weren't as knowledgeable about it. Now there is knowledge, and yet we are seeing immense rises in young people visiting tanning salons. We see on TikTok, aside from this conversation around misinformation around sunscreen, we see young people using the UV index, which is a measure of how much UV radiation is penetrating to the Earth's surface. They're using that to kind of time their tanning sessions, as opposed to what it should be used for, which is to tell you when you should be really hypervigilant about sunscreen use or when you should consider avoiding the sun altogether. And I think the difference is that we have the knowledge now, and yet we're engaging in the behaviors that we engaged in 30 years ago, but we should know better. Exactly.
How does sunscreen actually work?
Yeah, so there are a certain number of filters, both organic and inorganic, that are approved for use in the FDA. And And basically, they work in much the same way. They're absorbing ultraviolet radiation and releasing it as inert heat. And that's how these products work. The inorganic or mineral filters may reflect and refract some of that light, but essentially, they work much similarly to the chemical or organic filters in that they absorb that radiation before it can damage your skin. So there are two forms of ultraviolet radiation that reach the Earth's surface and our skin: UVA rays, which penetrate deeper into our skin and can cause the genetic mutations that lead to skin cancer, and then UVB rays, which are the rays that are primarily responsible for sunburn. And if a product is labeled broad spectrum, it means that that product protects against both of those rays. And that's what you're looking for. You're looking for a product that can not only prevent you from burning, but also can prevent you from some of the deeper cellular damage that can lead to skin aging and skin cancers.
Okay. What is SPF?
So SPF stands for sun protection factor.
Okay.
The SPF value basically is a calculation of how much more time you can spend in the sun with a sunscreen product versus unprotected skin. Now, that is assuming that you applied it in the right way, that it spread evenly over your skin, which we know when you're at the beach and you're just trying to get something on your kid while also getting sunscreen on yourself.
Not a science.
Exactly.
A little more of an art than a science, yeah.
Exactly. These aren't exactly controlled conditions, right? And you can see how sunscreen is not a perfect product and it's not a perfect solution. And I think that there is no dermatologist who will tell you it is perfect. Sunscreen is a tool that should be used in conjunction with other sun protective measures like UPF clothing and avoiding sun during peak hours. It's a tool. It's not a perfect tool.
Well, how would you describe in, like, you know, a few sentences, the anti-sunscreen movement? Like, who is driving this and what are they actually claiming?
You know, the reason why this story appeared in Men's Health is because a lot of the creators who are creating content around this happen to be men. And as somebody who sort of did a deep dive into the creators creating this content, that's what you notice. There are certainly some women who are creating this content as well, but I found that the overwhelming sort of majority of it were generated by men. So that's one reason. We also know that men historically do not wear sunscreen. I think 85% of men do not wear sunscreen.
85% of men don't wear any sunscreen in the United States or in the world?
In the US.
Wow.
And so it's a pretty high number. And why that is, I couldn't tell you. Maybe they don't like the way it feels. Maybe they don't feel like they need it. Maybe it's a bit of both. But it's
a tough guy thing. Like, I can handle the sun.
It's a high percentage of men. In terms of what is being espoused on social media, it's everything from these sunscreen filters are carcinogenic to sunscreen is to blame for the epidemic of vitamin D deficiency in our country. So it sort of runs the gamut. There are doctors who have surveyed a cross-section of this content, and what they found in their research is that the number one thing that these creators are harping on is the list of chemical or organic filters that are approved for use by the FDA, and they are claiming that these ingredients are toxic, cancer-causing, maybe contributing to rising skin cancer rates in our country. So that is sort of the main thing that a lot of them talk about.
Well, Brian, help me make sense of one thing here. I mean, we have this anti-sunscreen movement, but we are seeing both sunscreen use and skin cancer rates go up. Make sense of that for me.
Yeah. And that is one of the arguments that I think a lot of anti-sunscreen creators make. It's like, well, if sunscreen were the savior and actually made it an impact on skin cancer, we should be seeing skin cancer rates go down as people use more sunscreen. It's a tough connection to make. You know, obviously, we may be just better at diagnosing. We are much better at diagnosing skin cancers than we ever have before. And as, you know, I mentioned, sunscreen is not perfect. So it's quite possible that people who are wearing more sunscreen are also engaging in behaviors that may put them at a higher risk for developing skin cancers, such as being outdoors or having very fair skin. So in terms of those two rates climbing simultaneously, it's really sort of impossible to make that connection.
Okay, so should anyone believe that there is a scientific argument that using sunscreen is unhealthy or increases your chances of getting skin cancer?
To be clear, no well-designed human clinical trial has ever shown any connection between any sunscreen filter and human health harms. That being said, there is some suggestive research in rodents and fish and cell cultures that some of these chemical or organic filters have been linked to endocrine disruption, sort of hormonal issues, infertility, and that data exists for several of these filters. As one of the dermatologists that I interviewed for this story says, it's low relevance data. There's really no way to make the connection between any of that data and any real life risk in human beings. Certainly at the amounts that we are meant to use and the amounts that are approved for use by the FDA. You know, the FDA caps the levels of these chemicals in formulas at levels that they feel are safe. These animal studies, these cell culture studies, are exactly what toxicologists use to help come up with these levels. So the system is working the way it should. But of course, people are taking this information, these results out of context and making connections that they really shouldn't be making.
Well, it sounds like two different things are going on. You've got an anti-sunscreen movement, which you write about, and you have a growing interest in things like getting a tan and going to tanning beds.
Yep.
Are these two separate things happening or are they interacting in some way?
You know, I think they are two separate sort of phenomena, but I also think that they are related in that it appears to be a resistance to data and science that we sort of know to be true. And as I discuss in the story, there's plenty of blame to go around for why people may feel that way. But I think they're both related in that one common thread, which was sort of a resistance to decades and decades of science showing us that the sun contributes to all forms of skin cancer, skin aging, that tanning beds are classified as category one carcinogens. We should know better. And it is a resistance to that data. And to complicate matters even further, in 2019, just before we were all sort of going into lockdown for COVID, the FDA decided to reevaluate sunscreen ingredients and released their report on sunscreens, dividing chemical and mineral filters into two separate categories. One was category one GRAES, which stands for generally recognized as safe and effective. The other was category three, which the FDA requires more safety data on, because they found that the chemicals were absorbed into the bloodstream at levels that were higher than the threshold that they established. Now, doctors, dermatologists will tell you that absorption does not mean harm, and that in doing this, the FDA created a lot of confusion, and I think a lot of confusion that fueled a lot of the conversation around these chemical filters as being bad. And so I think that's another big reason we're here. The FDA's own guidance has sort of confused and muddied the waters a bit.
So some poor messaging by the FDA on what exactly they were looking at opened the door for people to come out and say, like, you see, there's concern here. Even the FDA is concerned. We should all be worried. And, you know, at least in some way led to this movement.
Absolutely. And what these people are ignoring is in that very same absorption study that the FDA sort of touted in its recommendations, the study authors said, you should still be using sunscreen. You know, do not use the results of this study to extrapolate any conclusions about these products. So that part was sort of conveniently ignored. And from the reporting that I've done for this story, many of these filters are used all around the world. There's decades of safety data on them. The FDA is just sort of slow sometimes to, you know, adopt some of this safety data in its own recommendations. And that's kind of where we're at.
So the FDA at some point could message a little better and come out and say, like, hey, these are these different kinds of filters. We know it caused some concern. Let's just sort of explain why you don't need to be alarmed. Like, why isn't an agency like that doing that? Why are we relying on you as a journalist to come out and explain this to everybody?
Well, they have put the burden on manufacturers. So manufacturers have to sort of come in with safety testing on these ingredients. They don't want to make, it appears, the judgment call. And we did reach out to representatives at the FDA for comment. They didn't comment on that particular matter. But we are still in a limbo right now. This was 2019 that the recommendation was made. I don't believe there is a final monograph yet in effect based on that 2019 recommendation. So we're kind of in a waiting game right now for more guidance on that matter.
Well, you also wrote about Rowan Jacobson, who published this piece in 2019 called "Is Sunscreen the New Margarine?" arguing that dermatologists had almost created like a fear the sun mentality that was becoming harmful. What was Rowan's essential argument? And why do you think that was an inflection point?
Rowan's essential argument is that the sun's light is life-giving, is essential to good health, and that a lot of the research showing that has been ignored by the larger dermatology community. I think he became a sort of de facto representative for the anti-sun. He became the anti-sunscreen guy, and I don't think it's a label he's particularly comfortable with. And when I interviewed him for this story, he admitted that when he is outdoors and he feels like he may be prone to getting a sunburn that day, he does wear sunscreen. So this is not somebody that does not use
this
product.
Does not wear sunscreen. Yeah.
Exactly. Or espouses beliefs that this product is cancer-causing. All Rowan's point is that the sun is not something to be feared. Get outdoors. And I really don't see that as a message that anyone can really argue with. And in fact, some of the dermatologists that I interviewed for this story acknowledged that he had a point, that there was a point in time where the advice was very dogmatic, where the advice was borderline fear the sun. And what you're seeing now is big sunscreen manufacturers like L'Oreal or Edgewell Personal Care, which manufactures Hawaiian Tropic and Banana Boat, their marketing and advertising campaigns, the language in those campaigns has shifted considerably in subsequent years to get outside, make these products part of your healthy lifestyle by being outdoors, enjoying everything that the outdoors has to offer, and protecting your skin at the same time. So it isn't an either or. And I think that's important. And I think that's an important evolution of the messaging for sure, because I don't think that he's entirely wrong in his estimation of that.
Well, I want to back up a little bit because I found some of the history that you gave us in terms of sunscreen just absolutely fascinating. I mean, you take us all the way back to the origins. Give people an idea of where sunscreen came from, the idea, the first sunscreen.
It's sort of up for debate. People had been using a lot of different things. There was a scientist who was a skier and noticed that, you know, he was getting sunburns when he would go skiing in the Alps. This was the 40s, the 1940s, I believe. And so he created what came to be known as Glacier Cream, which I think a lot of people recognize as the grandfather to the modern sunscreens. But really, the FDA sort of took notice in the 70s. And that's when they got involved in terms of regulating these ingredients because, you know, they were making claims that these ingredients could protect you from solare erythema, which is a sunburn. So the FDA stepped in, said, we need to regulate these ingredients to come up with a list of acceptable ingredients and acceptable amounts. And a whole bunch of ingredients, including many of the ones that are available today, were added to the monograph as, you know, acceptable ingredients to use. And we haven't really touched that list very much since then. So I think it's been almost 30 years at this point. The 90s was the last decade where we got a new sunscreen filter approved for use in the US. And so it's been quite a while. And, you know, fast forward to 2026, we finally have our first new one. So it's been a big summer for sunscreen.
For sunscreen. What's the big news? What's the big development in 2026?
So the big news is we have a new chemical or organic sunscreen filter. It's called Bemetrizinol, B-E-M-T for short. It will, unlike any of the other organic chemical sunscreen filters approved in the U.S., it will be, from the get-go, Category 1 grays, generally regarded as safe and effective, along with titanium and zinc. So that's huge news, because that means we will have a chemical sunscreen filter that is in the safest category per the FDA. What's also big news about this ingredient is that it's broad spectrum. It is a great UVA filter, and we're in short supply with those. There, of course, are the mineral filters. Zinc oxide is a UVA filter. Benzone, which is currently approved for use in the United States, is another UVA filter, but that's sort of it. So to have another option is really big news. It's been used overseas, in Australia, in the EU, and in other countries for many, many years. So we were overdue. And so this is big, big news.
But like, given that, if I'm a consumer, like, I know that the FDA was looking at different kinds of filters. I know you've written about sunscreen recalls that do happen. There are these terms thrown out there, like natural sunscreen and reef-safe sunscreen. Any general guidance for what people should make of all that and how they should make these decisions if, in general, sunscreen is safe?
Yeah, it's really confusing, and it's really confusing for consumers. What I will say, and what all of the doctors and toxicologists and science communicators that I spoke to for this story say, is that you do not need to be afraid of sunscreen. You do not need to be worried that the sunscreen that you are using and the amounts that you are using will cause you any harm. As far as some of the other marketing claims that you mentioned, reef safe and natural, I use the term marketing claims because that's exactly what they are. There is no evidence to show that any one sunscreen is safer for coral reef bleaching than another. It is merely a marketing claim. Same with anything labeled natural or clean. Those are, in most cases, meaningless marketing terms.
Not scientific terms.
Right.
But generally, if I'm going into a pharmacy and I get sunscreen at a certain SPF, I'm going to be safe. The range of results that I'm going to get are not that great, depending on all these different brands and all these different names.
The FDA requires that every sunscreen manufacturer have their final formula tested by a third-party clinical lab to validate its SPF claims. So an SPF 30 in a sunscreen that is made up of zinc oxide and titanium dioxide gives you the same protection as an SPF 30 made up of chemical filters like ivabenzone, homosalate, any of the other ones. So it is standardized in that way. So yes, you can be confident knowing that is uniform and measured uniformly. Now, there have been some scandals related to third-party testing labs and how accurate their testing is, because at the end of the day, it's naked eye observations. So they expose that skin to ultraviolet radiation and they calculate the time that it takes for the skin to show redness. And that's how they calculate the SPF value. So there is room for a fluctuation in the SPF value, and there is room for error. So that has also led to some of the distrust and confusion around these products. But from a purely high-looking perspective, the SPF values are the same no matter what.
As you said, this whole kind of inexact reality of the SPF system is one of the many forces at work that led us to this anti-sunscreen movement, open the door for that. How do you think this anti-sunscreen movement or sentiment connect to the just this broader distrust of institutions that we're seeing in the United States right now? Like, is sunscreen getting caught up in the larger culture war?
Yeah, I do think that it is. And I think that there is a general, in some people, mistrust of public health organizations. I think that that has always existed. I think COVID really kicked that into high gear. And the FDA's updated recommendations for sunscreen happened to coincide, as I mentioned, with the beginnings of COVID. So it sort of all snowballed into a bit of a perfect storm for this anti-sunscreen movement to grow. You know, here we have the FDA saying, oh, we don't know, we need more safety data on these ingredients. Then everyone goes into lockdown. Everyone's hyper online. Everyone's looking into everything. And you see this sort of momentum pick up for this type of sentiment. And Robert Kennedy, before he, you know, was serving in this current administration, tweeted about, you know, there was a scare with aerosol sunscreens and benzene, which we know is a cancer-causing chemical. And he tweeted about it. And so I think that we have been caught up in this cultural moment as well. This sort of resistance to public health recommendations and guidance.
But that made something that you pointed out in your story really surprise me. You talked about an analysis of 500 TikTok videos around sunscreen. Only 17% were actual board-certified dermatologists. Mm-hmm. But when it is scientists, dermatologists, who are getting out there and creating content about this stuff, people actually do seem to trust them when it comes to sunscreen.
Individual doctors and science communicators meeting people where they are, which is on their phone,
right,
clearly suggested by this research, does have an impact. And so when you talk a lot about, okay, well, what do we do about this? A lot of the doctors and communicators that I spoke with said, maybe it's just a ratio problem. Maybe we just need to kind of go out there and create content in a relatable way. Maybe we don't let creators corner the market on this. And that's what you're seeing more and more of. And I think there are some great dermatologists doing great work, but some of the people that I think are doing it most effectively are science communicators. So PhDs in chemistry, product formulators, cosmetic chemists that are talking about how these products work, how they are created, how they are manufactured. I spoke with a few of them for this story, and they really understand how to communicate these things in a way to serve as a rebuttal for a lot of the anti-sunscreen creators. It's meeting people where they are. So a press release from the NIH or the FDA hits a little different than this sort of spunky woman from Australia with purple hair talking to you about why this study is flawed and why sunscreen actually does protect you. It hits different, right?
Yeah.
I think there's this misconception that people can't understand. I think people can understand nuance and they can be spoken to straight from the hip. I think what they really want to do is relate to a message. I think they can understand a message, but can they relate to a message? I think that's the key question.
Looking ahead, I mean, you mentioned the FDA's approved Bimetrizinol, the first new active sunscreen ingredient approved in the United States in 27 years. It's been in Europe and Asia for a while now, so we've definitely been behind. Do you see that as helping, hurting the anti-sunscreen movement and helping or hurting efforts to combat the anti-sunscreen movement? I mean, what does this moment really mean looking forward?
Look, I think there are people that are going to believe this no matter what. And I don't know what will change their mind. Hopefully, it's some of the things that we talked about. Hopefully, it's different messaging framed differently in a more relatable way. Hopefully, that'll do the trick.
Getting more scientists onto social media.
Exactly.
In a compelling way.
Exactly. But I do think making better products that are more cosmetically elegant will reach a different subset of people that
cosmetically elegant. What is say more about that? I love that.
Yeah. Place. So I think one of the big complaints, especially for guys, and as a guy, I can relate, is these sunscreens are gloopy and they're greasy and they make my skin shiny.
Yeah, or, agree with all that.
Exactly. Or they leave this white cast on my skin, especially a problem for people with darker Fitzpatrick skin tones, they're just not great to use. And one of the exciting things about Bemetrizinol that I've heard from some of the people that formulate with it, and also some of the dermatologists who've used it, and anyone who's tried it overseas, is that it's not greasy. It will be available for manufacturers to use starting in September, not too far from now. And I know as a beauty editor that there are already companies that are formulating with this ingredient and are getting ready to launch products with this ingredient very soon. So I think just continuing to create those products will reach people who maybe aren't anti-sunscreen, but who just haven't found something that they like using.
Brian, thank you so much for all of this. Really enjoyed talking to you.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
We'll include a link to Brian Underwood's reporting on our show notes page. And every weekend, you can find new episodes of Apple News in Conversation in the Apple News app. Just tap on the audio tab, the little headphones at the bottom to find it. I'm David Greene. It's been such a pleasure bringing you these conversations and these stories over the summer and working with the incredible team at Apple News in Conversation. Shumita is coming back. She will be back in the host chair. Have a great end of summer and great fall, everybody.